Ladies and gentlemen, I call the regular meeting of the Savannah County Board of Supervisors to order. We will begin with the pledge of allegiance, followed by a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. All right, folks, do we have an adoption of the agenda?
Tonight.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. Mr. Dahl, take three.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. Just got a few things to report on. So the first thing is there's a birthday coming up for Mrs. Eager next week. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday.
I thought you forgot all those.
No.
We wish.
So we have a few staff members that started on board. One, the Commissioner of Revenue has a new staff member that started. Actually, they started a little while ago on August 5th. Sarah Poland, she's a Deputy Commissioner of Revenue, two. And then we also have, the county has a part-time position that we've been using for a while to kind of oversee the Zions Crossroads project. The current gentleman, Mark Dunning, who's also on the James River Water Authority Board, he was ready to fully retire, like just step back and kind of be out of working. So now we actually hired part-time Bobby Popowitz, who was a previous county employee now. So he's kind of sitting in the role of the utilities project manager currently, and he started on August 19th. So a couple announcements here. So first one is the 2019 elected officials breakfast will be held Tuesday, October 1 at 8 a.m. It's going to be at the Fluvanna County Library. It's going to be for elected officials, board of supervisors, school board members, constitutional officers, department heads, and others. So far, with the help of the TJ PDC and Mr. Blount, David Blount, we got Senator Peek, Delegate Ware, Delegate Bell, and then representatives also for Riggleman and Warner will be present also. And then pretty much, you know, the discussion will be issues that are affecting Fluvanna County and the Commonwealth. So if the board has anything that they want to bring up during that, what we want to do, we want to try and get some white papers or some official papers to send to the elected officials prior to their attendance. So if there's anything that the board has, you can send those on to Kelly. Kelly's kind of the point person for this to kind of get all the information together, and we'll get to have an agenda ready. But if there's anything that the board wants to discuss prior to, we can get those topics out to the elected officials.
Can we use a computer to see what committees they're on?
Oh,
people, which committees?
You want right now?
No.
Oh, just
Because if I have a question, I may want a question.
Okay.
I'll know that they're sitting on that committee.
Sure. We can we can get that information for you.
I can find it myself, but you don't want to do that.
We can get that information for you, Ms. Booker. So 8 o'clock Tuesday, October 1st at 8 a.m. at the Fluvanna County Library. Also, previously, the county and the schools had a monthly meeting, usually in the morning. It was generally the county administrator, the superintendent, and generally the chair of each board. The superintendent and myself, we were, you know, just kind of going back and forth discussing, you know, talking about kind of getting that ramped back up and doing something. But does the board want to try and do something different? Do we want to have two board members go to it? Do we want to have, you know, have different board members at different times? We want to keep the county administrator and the chair of the board, or what's the board want to do moving forward?
We also had done it before where we were doing the chairs of each board and then one other board member.
Yeah.
I think that was better than just...
We could certainly do that, and if we keep it on like a consistent, you know, maybe it's a morning or a consistent time, this way, you know, for instance, the chair and myself would always be on it, and then at a, you know, prior board meeting, I could let the board members know who wants to attend the meeting for this month. We can go that route if that's what the board wants to do.
Yeah, I think we ought to do two.
Do two?
Two representatives.
Okay. We'll do that. I'll correspond. I'll get some correspondence going with the superintendent, and we'll try and make that happen. And he'll probably, you know, kind of try and do the same thing with it, with the school board as well.
Okay.
So one issue that's come up that there's been a little discussion about, I've gotten some correspondence about, emails and got some telephone calls, and there's been some advertisements in the paper. So the Fluvanna County EDA, the Economic Development Authority, is issuing tax-exempt bonds. So the question is, why is Fluvanna County issuing and funding a project for the SOCA, the soccer league in Charlottesville? And the answer is, the county's not funding that. We're not funding that organization. What it is the EDA is acting as basically a conduit for this bond transaction. The county has bank qualified bond issuing capacity every year. It's about $10 million. And so for 2019, calendar year 2019, the county did not or does not intend to issue any tax exempt bonds on behalf of the county. So the EDA, in their capacity, can utilize that $10 million to issue bonds through the EDA for other organizations, tax-exempt organizations. This organization happens to be SOCA. This has happened before where the EDA has done this. So for instance, in this circumstance, whoever it is, they will pay a one-time fee to the EDA, and then they'll pay an annual fee to the EDA as the issuer of those bonds. And then the organization, for instance, in this circumstance, SOCA, they're the ones that are obligated to repay the bonds to the bank. The county's not obligated. We're not funding it on behalf of them. It's not going against the county. We just have bond capacity to do it through the county, but the EDA is a conduit to issue those bonds. Like I said, the county's done transactions like this before. There was a private school, I want to say in 2014, Veritas School out of Richmond, that we did the same type of transaction for. So kind of the process is the EDA holds a public hearing. They're going to be holding a public hearing next week, September 12th, to approve. It's called an inducement resolution. And then from there, the Board of Supervisors would then ratify or approve a resolution. Since the Board of Supervisors is the governing body of the EDA, and since they're using the county tax-exempt bond capacity. So that's kind of I'm not sure if any board members have heard anything about this, but I've gotten a couple emails, we've had a few calls about it. So that's what it is. The county's not funding another county's project. So,
what time is that meeting for the EDA? And the 12th September.
EDA meeting, what's it, 5 p.m.? 5 p.m. 5 p.m. in the Morris Room.
Where are they building?
It's in Omaha County.
It's in
Gulf
here. Where? Mr. Robin, yeah, come on up, you know. Approach the witness chair.
The SOCA bonds are for a field house that they'll be constructing in the Belvedere neighborhood off of Ryle Road. No, it's Albemarle County.
Yeah, it's Albemarle. And except the last time when the county did it, they did it for a private school in Richmond. It was for Veritas.
They've done Veritas. The most recent ones were Veritas, Region 10.
They did it for Region 10.
Yeah, so we just had a refinance actually for Region 10. And then I can't remember the third one. It's $1,000.
There's a one-time fee, and then based upon the dollar amount of the bonds, then there's an annual fee that they pay also. So that's kind of how the EDA. Yeah, that's kind of how the EDA gets money to do any type of economic development initiatives. The county doesn't. Let me take this back. We fund the EDA $1,000 a year, but besides that, the EDA doesn't have any seed money to do anything. So it's these types of transactions. Is the way that the EDA kind of collects revenue to do things on behalf of the county.
Is there a reason why Albemarle isn't doing this for them?
Armwell doesn't have the bond capacity.
Yeah. It doesn't?
They didn't have the capacity this year. And if we didn't do it, they could go to Louisa County. Louisa County could do it. Or Orange County or someone else.
It's only a disadvantage. We need to use the bond capacity.
Correct. That's And so when the bond council, so the bond council that is represented has represented the county before for our transactions and asked us, do we have any capacity? Are we planning on taking out any tax exempt debt in 2019? And the answer is no, we don't. We're not going to be taking out any tax exempt debt in 2019. So it's a way for the EDA to, you know, be involved and earn some revenue and do what they're there for. So. It wouldn't.
Any other questions?
Man, I would dodge that thing right off the mail.
Does the board have any other questions about that?
No.
Okay. So also, Mr. Weaver brought this to my attention, and it's been out in like the Daily Progress and some other things. So the Free Enterprise Forum does a local government spending index report, and this report pulls data from the Auditor of Public Accounts. And actually, in each of the board's packages there, you have the full report in your little binder there today. But it just looks at, you know, operating expenditures from 1998 to 2018. It compares Charlottesville, Albemarle, Fluvanna, Green, Nelson, and Louisa. And these are just a couple snippets. There's a lot more information there, or you can go to the website. And when I say operating expenditures, it excludes any CIP, so there's any like big blips in it. But so out of the report, it did recognize that Fluvanna was the second fastest growing locality in that period, growing at 43.5%. And then that Fluvanna was first in terms of school enrollment growth at 24%. If you look at the slide chart right here at the bottom, this shows inflation-adjusted locality per capita spending. So Fluvanna is the dark line at the bottom. We've been, for inflation-adjusted locality per capita spending, we've been below all those counties from 1998 to 2018. If you look at the chart over here, this just shows cumulative change and some of that, and shows population growth and school enrollment. But like I said, if you want to go to the website, there's more information there, and in the board's handouts there I gave you, it gives you some more information, you know, some other little data points too that you can look at as well. So use it for whatever you want. It's information that was reported on Fluvanna, so I just want to make the board aware of it.
Thank you.
Also, the Economic Development Authority, Mr. Rothmel, they have the Quad County Business Summit every year. This year, for the Quad County Business Summit, they're doing a quad tank, kind of like a Shark Tank type thing, but it's for entrepreneurs from the four localities. Green, Fluvanna, Louisa, and Orange provides a funding opportunity to take their business idea to the next level. So the individual team can win a cash prize up to $47.50, and it could be more. Mr. Rothmel, when's the Quad County Business Summit?
October 2nd.
It's October.
Town of Madison.
Yep.
Oh, sorry, Town of Orange, yep. Madison, and Oakville, and Orange.
So if you know any smart entrepreneurs out there that have a good business plan that want to have a chance to kind of bring their business plan to the next level, if they want to go here, they go to the website for it, and hopefully it'll pull up here. If they go to qcbsummit.com, I think somewhere down at the bottom here, you can register. It tells a little bit about the summit, and then it gives you some quad tank guidelines, business plan guidelines, and how to become a contestant. So any smart entrepreneurs out there, please send them to this, and so Fluvanna can get their name in the hat.
Is this for a new business?
No.
Yep.
No. It could be a current business.
Okay.
Yep.
I'd like a Fluvanna business to win so we can brag. So.
And as far as some of the next Board of Supervisors meetings, so we have a regular meeting on September 18th at 7 p.m. a meeting on October 2nd at 4 p.m. and then another meeting October 16th at 7 p.m. We don't have any work sessions scheduled at this point unless the board has anything specific that they want to hold a work session for.
I won't be here September
8th. You'll be out September 8th? Okay.
All righty, anything else? Any questions? Thank you very much, sir. Do appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All righty. As the county administrator's report, we'll now open our first round of public comments. Anyone wishing to address the board should come to the podium and state your name and address. Please remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes on topics and directed to the board. Is there anyone wishing to address the board at this time?
Good afternoon, board members.
Name and address.
Sam Patterson, Palmyra District. We dealt with this just a minute ago on the Economic Development Authority. Next week on Thursday, as we said, Fluvanna's Economic Development Authority is considering making a $3.75 million bond offering and capacity offering to the soccer organization, SOCA, based out of Albemarle County, to build a 50,000 square foot training facility, indoor training facility, while our charitable soccer organization, FISA, Fluvanna Youth Soccer Association, does not even have practice space in our own county, and we can't seem to get the grass mowed at Pleasant Grove for our soccer. Our county's funding of such a massive building project outside our own county to the private sector organization, frankly, sends all the wrong signals to our Fluvanna County parents and children who play soccer here. The Albemarle County organization, SOCA, is a very fine organization, don't get me wrong, and participates in soccer at the highest levels throughout the region. Our Fluvanna County soccer team plays and competes against this team, and indeed we play in their league. But the optics, and I focus on the optics of this, of Fluvanna County funding this massive training facility after they were rejected by Albemarle County, who is over their bond limit, is truly an unacceptable use, I think, of our bond issuance capabilities. Were this any other group, I probably wouldn't have the issue. The school in Richmond, et cetera, we don't compete against them. But particularly our focus must be on the cold fact that Fluvanna does not even have the practice space right now to accommodate the existing teams that we have. Nor are we even maintaining the soccer fields that we currently have. Myself and other parents who support Fluvanna soccer were alarmed to learn just yesterday of this bond offering to SOCA. SOCA is an organization that is much larger, much better funded, and much better staffed competitor to us. And as I said, they're a very fine group, and I think a lot of them. But they do not reside, as you said, in Fluvanna County, nor are they looking at building this in Fluvanna County. SOCA teams dominate right now our Fluvanna teams because of this disparity in funding and facilities. They have paid coaches, paid staff, and paid administrators, and they have three teams for every single age level. Fluvanna County can only field one team at the travel league level for each of our age groups. All of our coaches and administrators are volunteers. Most Fluvanna parents simply cannot afford the $1,000 to $2,500 twice per year for premiums to play on these teams. FISA has nearly 500 children in Fluvanna County participating in recreational and travel league soccer. Because we have so many children, our entire travel league of 150 children must participate in Louisa County to practice up at Zion's Crossroads, where we have been generously for 20 years offered places to play and to practice. We simply do not have the room at Pleasant Grove to do so. In fact, it was pointed out to me that more children participate in soccer in Fluvanna County than all of our other athletic programs combined. The intrinsic value of this early age athletic development of our children cannot be underestimated in this world of childhood obesity and diabetes. And most sadly and importantly, we have just learned that we are losing our facility at Zion's Crossroads next September to a large development. And we now have a dire and urgent need to both secure fields and funding to build out those new fields before next September. And frankly, we don't want to lose any of those children right now to SOCA because Fluvanna funded the building of their $3.57 million indoor facility. What I would ask the county and the Board of Supervisors to consider is how we can help build our own soccer program to compete on a level playing field against teams like SoCA, and to help build our own soccer program and help it flourish, and not, quite frankly, help the competitor next door beat us even worse than is already occurring. We need to focus on building our own soccer fields for our children's future, not, quite frankly, for Albemarle County's future. Please, I implore each and every one of you to consider what I'm saying here. The optics of this are terrible. And I ask you to vote against this in 2 weeks, because this organization planning to build does not reside in our county and is, quite frankly, against the best interest of our children. And that is where it begins, because this really is about the children. And building a successful soccer program that can compete with soccer is what we need for a truly level playing field. May I finish my last sentence?
Please back it up.
Our children are right now shocked and saddened that our own county would undermine their dreams of adequate fields and well-maintained by furthering the large gap in facilities upon which they play a game they truly love. Thank you all so much.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson. Anyone else wish to speak at this time? Seeing no one else, we'll now close the first round of public comment. We do not have any public hearings. Action matters. A, position description for HVAC specialist, Ms. Rice.
So Ms. Rice and myself will kind of double team on this one, and this is kind of a follow-up from the last meeting, and Mr. O'Brien wasn't here, so I'll just briefly go through a few slides really quick just to kind of give an overview of kind of where we were. So we're talking about HVAC costs and a new HVAC specialist position. So what we did is we looked at all the HVAC costs going back from fiscal year 15 to fiscal year 19. From contract costs, hourly costs, which is labor and materials, and then preventative maintenance. And we broke those out by subtotals of labor, materials, and then what we paid for service calls and mileage each year. So going back from fiscal year 15 to 19, for the labor portion of the bills, we paid anywhere between, basically the average is $137,000 in labor costs we paid for HVAC repairs, maintenance, anything doing with HVAC. Materials, we paid probably, I think it was right around 70-some thousand. 75,000 was the average for materials. And then service calls and mileage, we paid about right around $5,000. So just a quick recap. So replacement estimates, the county has 112 different units. The average lifespan of each unit is 15 years. Eight units are currently past the 15-year replacement date, and 49 units should be replaced in the next 5 years. So looking back at that previous chart, as what I said, in the past 5 years, we spent over almost $1.1 million in HVAC costs, whether repairs, preventative maintenance, anything like that. The average per year was $217,000 in costs. The average labor cost was about $136,000 a year and about $5,000 for service calls and mileage per year. Mr. Weaver, at the last meeting, wanted to see kind of a side-by-side of what the contract costs were versus some of the options to go with a staff, to do a staff option. So right here, I'm showing the $136,000 in annual labor. If we decided to go with a staff option, it would be about $61,000 salary plus benefits. Materials, $75,000. Our materials costs are not going to change that much. I will say, though, I bet you if county staff was getting their own materials, there would maybe not be a markup of anything like that. So we might have a little lesser amount in materials cost. There probably would be. So there would be some, but without knowing what that is, we just kind of left it as is, as kind of an extra cushion in there. Obviously, if we went with the staff option, staff members would have to take vacation here or there. So if something comes up, you know, we want to make sure that our units are being serviced and we have someone on call if we need them. So we just estimated $10,000 a year. And I think if I remember correctly, do you know what the percentage was?
Last year, it was
Yeah, I think we took about 5 to 7% of the total cost of what we paid for HVAC costs. Also, you know, if we had a staff option, we wouldn't have annual service calls or mileage calls or anything like that. The only cost for a staff member we would have a one-time cost for a vehicle, for some tools, and then obviously we'd have fuel, which we didn't really calculate into this, but there'd be some fuel costs as well. So on average, I said we're paying about $217,000 a year for HVAC cost. If we did the staff option, year one, with all the costs here plus a vehicle, year one would be about $174,000. After that, the average is about $146,000. So year one, you'd save about, you know, $42,000. Every year after that, you'd save about $70,000 a year. So that's kind of looking at what we're doing currently versus creating an HVAC specialist position in the county.
The $61,000 in labor for the salary,
yep.
Does that include benefits?
That's salary
everything.
And benefits. Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, and what we do, we estimate about 22%. I think we just estimated $50,000, and we estimated 22% for benefits okay. costs, which kind of includes everything. So the question to the board was, moving forward for fiscal year 20, what do you want to do? Do you want to issue a brand new RFP for a new HVAC contract for maintenance and services, or do you want to create a new county HVAC position? And the board last week said, let's look at creating a new county HVAC position. So that's what we did. We put the numbers together. Jessica created a position description, and I'll let Jessica talk about the HVAC specialist position. And just let me just add one thing too. In addition to this position, we'll probably see some savings elsewhere, because this position would be able to do some minor electrical fixes as well. Also, this person would have to hold a license. So right now at the landfill for refrigerators, is it refrigerators, Calvin? Any refrigerant in there, we have to pay a disposal fee for that. If we had someone on staff to do that, that was licensed to do that, we'd save $2,000 to $3,000 a year in addition. And we're not, that's nowhere on here. We're just kind of talking about the HVAC component, and I'll let Ms. Rice talk about the position itself.
Sure. What we looked at doing is just creating a position that would focus specifically on HVAC, and that's a very specialized skill set. And this person would have to have so many years of experience and training, and either have gone through like a technical education program or worked as an apprentice with somebody, because they're going to be focusing on the entire county's HVAC systems. As you saw earlier, there's 112 units. They would be responsible for replacing units, doing preventative maintenance, doing troubleshooting, the service calls, all of that type of stuff. And if, in fact, there ever was any downtime, which we don't anticipate much, we've written the description in a way where they can help out in other facility maintenance type projects, the other folks that are on staff. So we're expecting the salary to come in around $50,000, maybe a little bit higher or lower. And then when you add benefits, that's where we came up with the $61,000 to $62,000. The expectation would be for this person to maintain their licensure and certifications. The county would provide tools for them and equipment, and also retain ownership of those tools as well, and replace them as they get worn out. So this was just a proposed alternative to spending $140,000 a year in labor costs for outside contractors. And we're constantly looking to way to improve efficiency, response time, and all of those things. And this was our proposal for you to consider as an alternative to do that.
And just one thing too, if you go back to this chart here, so just kind of as we went back, so the finance department went through every single invoice for a 5-year period. So we get invoices that were considered contract, and it didn't break it out by labor and materials on that invoice. So just on a very low side, we estimated that 50% of that invoice was labor, 50% of it was materials. But if I had to if I had to bet, it would probably be a higher percentage of labor than materials, most likely, but we just did 50-50. Again, with preventative maintenance, on our preventative maintenance contracts, it doesn't break it out for what degree we're spending on materials versus labor, but preventative maintenance, you're going around and you're changing air filters, you're checking on stuff. So we figured a higher percentage was going to be labor costs than it would be materials for that. But then in this section of hourly for labor and hourly for materials, these were actual costs that were broken out on the invoices for every single fiscal year. So that's kind of how we came up with the cost for that. And like I said, I think the labor costs are probably very, very close or right on, if not maybe a little bit underestimated.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So the numbers that we have here, we feel confident that there's going to be good savings, and we feel confident that there's probably going to be better savings. Now, with this too, you know, let's just say that we didn't get this type of savings. So you got to remember, whatever we're repairing is what the cost is going to be. So if we have someone that's able to be more efficient and fix more things throughout the year, maybe we're spending, you know, maybe right here, you know, the average was $200,000 a year that we're spending, but say we spent $180,000 a year in HVAC costs, but we're servicing a lot more units that we have and getting them up to speed a lot quicker, then that's going to be a savings long term for the county as well. So
is maintenance done every quarter or twice a year?
Are you talking about the preventative, Calvin?
Quarterly.
We have 146 HVACs. 112 units. Different big units, small units, yep.
Wow. One of the things we talked about too, and I think that will help, is probably after about 6 months, maybe as we're starting to close out the next fiscal year, coming back and actually showing where we landed as far as cost savings goes, and I think that would help us too. And just to make sure we're on the right track.
And you got to remember, you know, starting off this fiscal year, we're already paying contract costs. And one thing that we maybe can look at, too, is what we may start doing, too, is for some of the costs, we may, like I said, we were able to go back and break them out, but we could even break them out further in some of the budget lines for what is actual HVAC repairs, too. So it'll make it a little easier to pull up some of the numbers instead of the finance department having to go through a fine-tooth comb, pulling up every HVAC invoice and totaling up from 5 years. So
when you say 15 units already passed their life expectancy,
yep,
are those big ticket items? Do we budget?
Calvin, do you want to talk about those units?
You're gonna have to come up here.
Yeah.
Maybe he wasn't prepared to.
We allow the units to have a 15-year lifespan. Some of the units are already 20 years old, 25 years old, and so they're past their date, they're prime, they're not economical to have in service. And so those need to be replaced.
And Ms. Booker, I think Ms. Booker, you asked kind of like the cost factor, what some of those units would cost. Is that what you asked?
Like when we replaced it at the middle school, it was $4 million or whatever.
Yeah, we're not talking a whole chiller unit. We're probably talking smaller units, but if you're talking H, just a general unit, probably, what, at least $10,000?
Yeah, probably 10 units, depending on stuff.
And we anticipate with this position, right now there is a maintenance specialist that does some maintenance items around the county. This person could, you know, work under that person, or if there's a larger job, if he needs to pull someone in, he can't handle one thing by himself, he could do that. But after speaking with Calvin and Dale Kreitzer in Public Works, they feel that this individual could handle all the work that the county does, and there wouldn't necessarily be a need necessarily, unless it's a big job where we had to pull in and do it on top of a roof, you know, you'd have to rent a crane or something like that. But the actual work itself, as long as we find the skilled person, which we feel we can, we'd see the savings.
No, I think it's fine, and I'm ready to make a motion when the board's ready.
All right. I got an interesting fact about HVAC units. Just turned into the day. They were actually invented in the 1850s, and it was done for creating ice.
Well, I remember
technology, that. Right? But it actually, the guy
I was not going to say that.
The guy who invented it was quashed by the big shipping companies. They were shipping that from New York down. And he first presented it in the Royal Court of Paris, and they did get their ice shipping. So they're going to have to serve the champagne more. And he came out with four buckets of ice that he created. So it took another 100 years before actual.
Somebody got the hedge over there.
It's a small table there.
And if the board approves this, what we'll do, we'll probably come back at the next meeting to do some type of budget transfer for the position out of, like I said, it's going to be a neutral. We're pulling money out of what we're paying for repairs to go to the position if the board approves this.
You ready for a
yes,
motion?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, I move to approve the following description for the new HVAC specialist position with a projected cost savings of $50,000 plus a year. I have that on to the end.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, very eloquent. Seconded by Mr. O'Brien, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Thank you very much, Mr. Race. Next, we'll move forward with termination of agreement for services with Pierce Group Benefits, LLC. Ms. Rice, you're back.
I am back. So in 2016, the county entered into an agreement with Pierce Group Services to serve as a benefits consultant, an insurance and benefits broker, and also they provide an online portal for employees to go through the enrollment process. That contract actually renews every July automatically and is it runs for the fiscal year that we're currently in. So after doing some assessment of the current county's needs and looking for, again, we're looking at efficiencies and accessibility, the staff is proposing to terminate the agreement with Pierce Group so that we can focus on assisting our employees in-house a little bit better and providing some more options for them and additional staff support as well.
So this is kind of a two-part deal, but it doesn't have to be. So anyway, this action item kind of goes in conjunction with the second one for the human resources assistant. So if the board chooses to approve this termination, then we would hope, well, we would need for the board to approve the second item.
Is there any associated risk with having those kinds of things in human resources externally?
Jessica.
I think the only risk that we run into is handled through the procurement process, just making sure that we're following what the state's guidelines are for professional services and insurance coverage, because what will happen is that our procurement officer will be issuing a request for proposal for insurance coverage specifically and directly to your Cigna, your Anthem, your Aetna, and all of that stuff. That is probably where a lot of our concern will come up. Thankfully, we have Fred's office and Christina on board helping us with this as well. But as far as actually dealing with the insurance providers, we're doing that already internally. And so this is just a way for actually employees to be able to sit down with people who are directly talking to the insurance providers instead of adding another middleman in the process, which has created a lot of confusion in the past.
Because right now, as it is, we have you know, our insurances, insurance dental, and all that, and then we have like our supplementary benefits. So if we terminate this, we are still going to need to do an RFP. We may or may not for supplementary benefits. Maybe we want to keep who we have, or maybe we want to do an RFP to like get a new company to provide supplementary benefits. We're obviously going to want to do a new RFP for insurance. You know what we've ended up with the last 2 years, and our increases have not been that fantastic at the end of the day. So we're gonna certainly want to look at ways that we can either, one, you know, lower our cost, you know, provide more benefits, or two, you know, even look at what maybe the schools are doing too. But you know, that's still kind of up in the air as far as which way we want to go. But the first thing for us to do is for this to happen so we can start going out on our own and making it happen. And with having a half-time position, that halftime position will allow Ms. Rice to be able to focus on some more of the high-level stuff. We'll have the procurement office to be able to issue the RFPs for that. And then we'll just have a face in the office that can work with employees year-round. Because as it is right now, you get, you know, you have open enrollment for like a week or two, and you get people come out, and then after that, it's they're not here necessarily. So, but we're still paying for some services.
It's what, about 19,000?
We're paying about, 17,000 a year. Mm-hmm. Yep.
All righty. Any other questions from the board? Can we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the termination of the agreement for services between Pierce Group and Dallas City County for that date, February 9, 2016. By letter of termination, directed to Mr. Chris Pierce and Pierce Benefits, who resides in such termination being effective December 31, 2019, and authorize the County Administrator to sign the termination letter subject to a request to form by the County Attorney.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. That's 5-0, and we'll move forward with C. Position description for human resources assistant, Ms. Rice.
Just really quickly, what the design for this position is to obviously assist with the benefits administration that we just talked about, and also help resolve some of the billing and claim issues, initiate wellness programs, and just do help with day-to-day HR type functions, including records management and data entry and that type of stuff. One of the things that's really beneficial is by being able to do this, it will free up a lot of my time to focus on policies that haven't been revised since 2004. Position descriptions are the same. I'm dealing with things as they arise instead of just doing a complete overhaul on the stuff that needs to be done. And also we're looking at different career development, employee training, and things like that. And so that's kind of the ultimate goal of bringing a lot of this stuff in-house with some additional support. What we're looking at financially is about $170 difference every year as far as costs, which I can find that in my budget with office supplies or what have you. So,
is this a full-time position?
Part-time. It would be about 20 hours a week.
So basically, this is just kind of, instead of paying a third party from North Carolina, we'd be hiring somebody to be in our office every day. Is there to do additional work available?
Yep.
Yep. I actually think we will end up getting more for money than what we're actually paying out right now. So.
Like you said, if we're paying $19,000, we get 2 to 3 weeks of help.
Okay. I'll make the motion.
You ready, Ms. Egan?
Yes. I move to approve the following description for the new human resources assistant position.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Egan, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. That's passed 5-0. Thank you very much. There are no appointments. We will now go forth to presentations. D, General Assembly Legislative Program. Mr. Blunt, Director of Legislative Services for the TJPC-DC.
It's a mouthful, isn't it?
And board members, also in your package, in your little paperclip package, you had a copy of the legislative priorities for 2019 as well, which is up on the screen.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate time on your agenda this afternoon. Before I get started, I did want to acknowledge Dominique Lavarada, who is with me today. I believe, Mr. Chairman, you and Mr. Dahl met her. She has come on board with us at the Planning District about 6 weeks ago. She's going to be serving as a legislative assistant to me, as well as working on some planning areas. We've already gotten her well embedded into the Rivanna River Basin Commission work. She's doing a great job so far, so I'm glad to have her on board. I just want to thank you for the opportunity to be able to work with you all every year on legislative issues, on the legislative program, and to once again give you a shout out and kudos for the legislative event that you're having here in another month. I'd you know, I really think the way you all are doing it, by getting your legislators in the time of year that you do, but then also including your school board and your constitutional officers and others, and discussing, you know, all issues that are you have concern or that you're interested in Fluvanna, is a very, always found to be a very productive meeting. So congratulations on that. As Mr. Dahl mentioned, you do have the 2019 priorities in your packet. Today, I just wanted to remind you that I am soon to be diving into making changes to the regional legislative program for 2020, and to have an opportunity to get any input from you on issues you know, that we should add to the program, take out of the program, or change in the program. Hope to get a draft of the revised program back to you in about a month or so, and then, as I usually do, would like to come and see you again in November to talk about the revised program and to get you to vote to approve that. At this point, with regard to some of the specific items, I'm really looking just at some tweaks. You know, I think the items that we have had there for a number of years as priorities really tend to be those things that are most important to us. You know, they're written in the program broadly to give us flexibility to be able to advocate and, you know, support and oppose specific legislation. And I think it's worked out pretty well to do it the way that we've done it. Did want to give you just a brief budget update, since this is going to be the state's two-year budget-forming session, I guess. Governor Northam will present his proposed budget to the General Assembly in December, and then the General Assembly will shape the budget for both fiscal year 21 and fiscal year 22. Unfortunately, at this point, with the November elections looming, we don't know kind of what the lay of the land is going to be in terms of the makeup of the General Assembly. But sometime after that, in December, we'll kind of have our first indication from the governor, since he gives us all a Christmas present and presents his budget right before the holidays. You know, the state of the economy right now in Virginia is said to be good. However, hearing from both the executive branch as well as the legislative branch and their leadership that they're really going to be looking with caution during the budgeting process that will be coming up. They've got a couple of the state revenue streams that are kind of trending downward, and then always looking to see what the state of the economy will be at the national level. So you take that in conjunction with what we know comes around every 2 years, Ms. Booker, the re-benchmarking of K-12 education cost, which always is probably several hundred million dollars at least in additional state funding, as well as additional local funding that that may have to come as well. Medicaid cost, without expansion, just to continue to do to what we've been doing with Medicaid, is always several hundred million dollars more. That's the fastest growing state-funded program right now. And then the governor, certainly this is the only budget that will have his fingerprints on it for the entirety of his term. So it's a two-year budget that he will want to include you know, his priorities and his initiatives in. So those will have to be taken into consideration as well. So I'm glad to take any questions you may have about legislative issues, glad to take any input or suggestions that the board may have for changes to the program. And again, thank you for working with us on this.
I'll just say this out there, and you're aware of this, but I wasn't aware of it, or at least it never registered with me until I heard it in August in Richmond, that they do the SOQ funding numbers and the way they figure up their numbers. They're doing 2020. Did you know what numbers they use?
Yeah, 2009.
2018. Yeah. They're running 2 years behind.
Yeah.
They basically told us that all they're doing, whenever they start to talk, oh, we're doing this too, they're just adding inflation to it. But they're using numbers that are 2 years old. So there's an additional at least 4 to 5% that we have to come up with each time to cover what they don't.
And by the time you get to the end of the biennium, then you're really talking about four-year-old data, which is...
We're covering 12, 15 percent.
Yeah. All right. And the same thing that's when you're studying health issues, which we've been doing, mm-hmm. the math study, it's 2 years back.
Yeah.
But I have a question, too, mm-hmm. about the expanded
to the school board to know what is what has been the history of their changing policy and moving money for us to do. They're not funding it. What are some of those issues?
Yeah, probably the most prominent one. Yeah, probably the most prominent one that I would mention, you know, as a state policy change. And we saw a number of them back during the Great Recession, where the state was looking to cut the budget. As you know, you all were dealing with budget challenges as well at the same time. But the state was funding various support staffing positions at a certain level, and they drastically reduced the amount of support for those positions. You know, I think they maybe cut some of the positions out of the formula, but it's hundreds of millions of dollars that was quote unquote saved for the state budget, but the localities, I think in many cases, continued to pay for them.
Something ridiculous, like I think in SOQ positioning, they only allow for one aide at Central. It's going to be kind of busy.
And there's been some other things, you know, Mr. Chairman, you mentioned inflationary factors, things that they used to recognize in the education funding formula that they decided to no longer recognize. To me, that's a policy change that then has a budgetary impact on localities.
Yeah. And I know that probably the school will bring issues like the State Board of Education. The SOL and testing has really been watered down in order probably to make the states not look good in testing. They've put in so many different little things now that you can count toward that test. It's most difficult to understand. And the school would probably do more.
Yeah, and that may be something that you know they may want to bring up with the legislators, you know, when you meet next month as well. And you know, even though a lot of that I think has been done at the Board of Education effort.
On our school board, we test too much. And someone told me yesterday that the state was looking at that. They thought they got to cut back on testing as well. But we need to be careful with cutting back. I'm just talking from the educators.
That's right.
Everybody's testing.
I might get an answer to this one. The competition is something that they give to Northern Virginia. How long has that been going on? And when I say this, folks, I'm saying that they give Northern Virginia additional state funding so they can compete with Maryland.
Mike.
To me, the Rockingham supervisor and I looked at them and said, wait a second, guys. We got to compete with Harrisonburg, Charlottesville, Richmond.
Right.
We're losing teachers to the city schools because they have so much more of a tax base than we do.
Right. I want to say that's probably been in place 20 years.
Okay,
so it started out just kind of that Northern Virginia core, maybe Planning District 8. But there, as you know, if you look at the list, there over time have been some additional localities as things have kind of spread out from Northern Virginia. So I think they might be funded at a different level, but. But yeah, and that's something I went through a period of time where the legislature was looking to, you know, to cut that support, that additional compensation supplement back, and
they provide us the money because they have so much more population, so much more industry.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just think that's one of the things that they really get rural schools at.
Yeah. You know, and I know I've had some conversations probably with you all before, I know with others, when you talk about looking at the different components of the funding formula, and, you know, that's been in place for decades now, and you know, I think if you start looking at, you know, I know one of the things that the rural localities are interested in is being able to have the, if you're in, use land use valuation, to have that considered as part of the formula when you're looking at property values and that sort of thing, but, you know, you start talking about one thing that would help one, you know, part of the state or one type of locality, you know, then, you know, another group is going to talk about, you know, ESL challenges or what have you. And I just, you know, having been around a good while now, I don't know that I see them opening up the that composite index formula anytime soon. Because that, you know, bottom line, legislators, when they start monkeying around with it and making changes, they're going to look and see the localities that they represent. Do they gain money or lose money?
Hasn't it worked pretty well in the past, though, composite index?
Well,
You know, aside from the fact that, you know, the data that feeds into it is old. I think you could say this, that, or the other thing doesn't work well, but I think for the most part, it's been somewhat consistent. Yeah, I would say consistent rather than fair, because I think you could argue that from many different sides. But it has been consistent for 40 years.
Yeah.
I would definitely like to see them consider better methods of addressing gerrymandering, or say it's priority that they can do it.
Right. Well, we do have the constitutional amendment out there that was approved to set up the commission. That will, you know, the process for amending the Constitution, as you know, it has to be approved again this year by the legislature, and then if it is approved in the same form, it would go on the ballot November a year.
There's one other thing that's not on here, and I don't know if it's going to be long on here, don't correct me if I'm wrong, but the issue we're having with boundaries and voting precincts. That's going to become a financial nightmare for us. Come down from the state, so that's...
Yeah, yeah, and we do, we addressed that last year, so we'll keep that position.
Yeah, we addressed that last year, and they tried to fix it, and then it got voted down, but bring that back up, because that's sooner or later down the road, there's only one way to fix it. That's going to have a real big price tag.
Yeah, and along those lines, one of the specific positions that I was considering adding has to do with election administration, election funding. And, you know, for the 2020 elections, there's going to be this period right before the election for early voting. And I think we've had a conversation about that, you know, being able to accommodate that in the registrar's office or, you know, looking for some additional space. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, there's logistical questions, there's financial questions, legal questions related to that as well in terms of the machines themselves.
Yeah, we certainly know we don't have the capacity or the space in our current form right now to be able to accommodate that. I know the registrar's voice concerns about that.
Yeah, and I know VACO has been working on that issue and been working with the registrars and electoral board folks, and we, you know, certainly want to participate with them in trying to get some sort of relief or assistance or support from the state during the coming General Assembly, so that when that hits next November, it's not the predicament, I guess, that you're seeing now.
You know, the Children's Service Act, we urge the state to be cognizant of containing the cost of the Children's Service. I mean, there are tons of mental health issues with families and with children, and it's just hard to think about how can you cut costs, how can you service these children and families, community-based, because it's less expensive than what if we have to ship them off to somewhere else. And that's
well,
hold the line, but you know, when you know that family needs something, it's just so weary of looking at whether we're giving services and parents are not using those services, that you can't continue paying those people. There's nothing that that demands, although you may know worst thing in the world is going on, that these families have to accept this service and need to see some benefits from it. That's the key. You draw money in if you want. But
well, in addition to just the management of the program, it's very, very labor intensive, and the amount of funding that Fluvanna gets for the admin piece is like nothing. It's peanuts compared to what it takes, and really what we have and what it takes to keep the position going and all the administrative components that goes along with that, the paperwork, you could almost even have a second or a half position.
Right, just to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's another example. I think you talk about, you know, old numbers. I think that the administration money up until a couple of years ago when they actually did, you know, put a little bit more in, was based on your CSA pool money expenditures from 2004, 2006. And they tried to take that year and they tried to make it, you know, earlier. And so, I mean, we were able to get it just kept where it was, but, you know, getting that change to 2018.
Yeah, it doesn't even remotely fill.
Right. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you all for your input and discussion.
No, and I just want to give David a big shout out and a big thanks for the local elected officials breakfast. Once we told him the date and what we wanted, he ran with it, and he got everyone lined up in like no time. So
yeah, looking forward to seeing you all at that in a couple of weeks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Have a great day. Science Crossroads Small Area Plan, Sandy Shocker, Director of Planning and Transportation, TJPDC. It was just David. I did better with you.
I'm glad you got the warm-up out of the way. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. It's nice to meet those of you I haven't had a chance to work with, and I'll be looking forward to meeting or to working with you moving forward, especially on this project. Hopefully you're all aware that the TJPDC was requested to conduct a small area plan jointly for Fluvanna and Louisa County for the Zion Crossroads area. So the great news for you all is that it's already funded by funds that were already allocated to the PDC through our rural transportation funding and through the per capita funding that you and Louisa already contributed. So we have a budgeted out based on our task, but it's money that has already been contributed, so you will hopefully get a great product. And it's not costing anything additional for anybody else, which is always a bonus. We had a project kickoff meeting on the 21st of August, and that went really well. Mrs. Eager was there, as well as multiple members of your staff, to go over the scope and create an expectation. So we are expecting to have several meetings. About every 6 weeks, we'll be having a steering committee meeting, and somebody from you all, I don't think you've appointed anybody at this point yet, have you?
Probably going to be Douglas for the most part.
Okay, and one of the board members as well will be joining us for that meeting. So we'll be scheduling those out, and we'll be wrapping up the project by next August. So it'll be a year long. We'll have the completed plan. We will be doing a little bit of work with you all. You'll have a representative on the steering committee. We'll do a visioning workshop with you all and with Louisa County as well, with their elected and appointed officials. And we're really looking forward to helping you all create sort of a joint unified vision for the areas together. I heard in the kickoff meeting that one of the goals, there were a couple things that were mentioned that I thought was helpful to give us really good direction, that you want this plan to help create a place where people can live, work, shop, and play all in the same place. So once you're in Zion Crossroads, you don't have to leave unless you just really want to go somewhere else. And also that they want people to be able to come to the area and not necessarily notice a distinction between whether they're in Fluvanna and Louisa. So those are some of the goals that we're going to help try to create. There are some differences into where you both are as far as your planning processes, but this is a pretty close boundary line of the area that we're going to be looking at. We got Fluvanna's GIS information up there. Louisa County's is pretty close. I don't know if we have the most current parcel map, but based on the parcel map that we have, this is pretty close. So if it's changed, it's only going to be very, very, very slightly on the Louisa County side. So we're going to be focusing on this area and helping get everybody into a place where we can start making some really, hopefully, specific recommendations on what we want this area to actually look like. You all know better than I do that there's been a lot of development pressure there. You have some major transportation corridors that are intersecting there. With the water project coming through, there's going to continue to be development pressure. So this is a really good time to kind of get in front of it and help shape how that growth occurs before it kind of gets beyond a place where you can have that level of jurisdiction, I guess, over what it looks like.
And if the board remembers, too, so this purple line right down here, this is at 15 in Little Creek Road, Little Creek and Morris Road. Originally, it went to basically about Starlight Business Park. So from one of the last board meetings, the direction was to move it a little south on 15, which we did. In addition, I know the board wanted to try and get it to go a little further west on 250.
So what we did before we got into a lot of housing, there's a large tract of land here that that's a property owners are jointly working to market the property. It's about 130 acres.
174.
174 acres.
Why would you not, I mean, I know that there's some development there and that, but if you follow the boundary line there, why would you not think there's some larger pieces of parcels there as well, too?
Like which one?
Well, just to the bottom left. So basically where your pointer is a little bit more to the left.
Right here?
A little bit more to the left. Like, why would that big chunk of land not be potentially included in that boundary line?
You know, we are really trying to focus on, like I said, there's limited funds to look at what VDOT's going to be able to spread their resources on, and we're trying to get and look at more immediate commercial resources on the Fluvanna side, more so than, you know, what's coming down the line a lot further. We wanted to try and get something that would address maybe more of our immediate needs. I mean, like I said, if the board wants us to slightly reshuffle.
When we talked about this before, the lack of funding, it was very minuscule what was in Fluvanna that was on there. And it's now probably tripled the amount of land that was in Fluvanna.
Because before it ended right about...
That section right there, it was right across, no, up there, where the little bottleneck is.
This is Zion Station.
Yeah, it came around Zion Station, but then it went straight around and just had the business park and came over to basically where our water line's going to be. Yeah. Where the pumping station is, that's where it was ending, right there. So it went a quarter of a mile down 15 and added all of the Little Creek, and then it added to Williams Alexander property. And that, there was nothing else grew, I don't think, the rest of it.
No, on our side?
I don't think it grew on Louise's side.
Yeah, it's interesting the way they carved out that bottom side on their side as well, too.
Where is Louise?
The red line.
No, that's the county line. The Williams Alexander property is that little section right there. I know that there's a huge area just past where that ends. It comes into Fluvanna County. Yeah. I don't have a big enough map.
Yeah.
To the southeast right there. That's where they have the... No, down here to the bottom right.
Right. Oh, to the bottom right?
Yeah, keep coming. East. Keep going east.
Yeah. Okay.
Right down in there.
Yeah.
Where you, down in there, going into the Fluvanna area, I know that there's a huge area that was clear cut, probably 600 acres. Part of Fluvanna, part of Fluvanna.
Okay.
That would be my only other suggestion of area we might take a look at.
Okay.
It's off of Bobby Road. It's Bobby Road. It's the little U that goes around. It's not Bobby's Church Road.
Is it?
It's not Bobby Church.
Right.
Not Bobby's Church. It's the little U where the carvings are on the corner, comes back around, comes out on pass by, yeah.
Okay.
It's right there at the bottom right hand corner of the part that you've got.
Okay.
Right above the corner.
Yep.
That road right there.
Right there?
Yep.
The red line, is that?
I can't remember the exact name. Okay. I think it's Bobby Road. It's only a mile long. 2 miles long.
And the red line is
the county line.
That's the county line between Fluvanna and Louisa.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, Louisa has a little bit more of a jump start on their commercial activity than Fluvanna does. So that's where, you know, we're trying to make sure that we're addressing our most immediate commercial needs and then some of the close proximity ones.
And a large portion of theirs is a golf course, which is not going to be industrialized. They're not going to bury that.
Right, it's a golf course and there's a housing development. Right. So we thought it was important to include them as part of the subject area so that those voices were captured in the process, but it's not necessarily going to end up being a large area recommended for.
A lot of theirs is already built out.
Right, correct.
You had a plan that was made years ago, and it's a nice problem.
Is it? Are you
talking about every growth area did a plan. Falcone did theirs and we did landscape. They had a book and they had maybe a
I can remember seeing the book.
That area.
Like I said,
it probably is.
I don't think there's enough money. I don't think VDOT has enough money to expand a whole lot further. That's basically what we were told the last night. We just asked if they could do those two extra sections.
Well, the good thing with this happening right now, too, it's kind of in conjunction, too, with the county's, Flavanna's planning department doing the comp plan update, too. So those two will kind of fit together nicely, design small area plan on this. So
5 years on it?
Yeah. Yep. Time flies when you're having fun.
Well, I'm sitting there looking at it like you were talking about just large areas of tracts of land. Right there in the bottom middle, that looks like large tracts of land. I don't know.
Yeah.
It comes in off the back of the chips. You see what I'm talking about right there? Dead center, right to bottom. Come back to your left.
Yeah.
Yeah, right there, from there down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All those.
Okay.
I'm just looking at large areas of land. Somebody might be able to do something.
Yeah. Well, and I think this was based on is this a documented UDA already?
Douglas.
Yeah, so there are some boundaries there. Maybe part of the study is to recommend looking at revising where those boundaries are. So we could certainly include that as part of the discussion.
Excitement about the pipeline coming down from the community. Do you have any questions about approaching as questions or anything?
I know from businesses we're getting a lot more inquiries about what's it going to cost to connect, when can we connect, what are the fees, and we're just not there yet. So
we don't know either.
Had some people inquire from me trying to say, first off, they went, what are y'all doing up there?
Yeah. I haven't had
that. Under a rock. Putting in a water line.
All my people under the rock. Because they didn't ask anything.
I worked at Nelson County before I came to the PDC, so y'all talk about the pipeline too much, I might start running out of there.
I've already had that argument.
Okay.
Alrighty.
Any other questions? Our next meeting is going to be on October 4th, so we'll keep things moving around, and hopefully I'll see at least one of y'all there.
And we'll get information out to the board if a couple board members want to show up. And at some point, too, we'll probably have some town hall meetings or things like that.
Absolutely. I think if we did a town hall, we might do one up at Beaver Dam Baptist. Yep. We could do one up there. Wouldn't hurt to do one at Elmira. Wouldn't hurt to do one at Kent's Door because everybody's going to have questions. But anytime you move further east, you're coming towards Kent's Door. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
What time is that, October 4th?
It's going to be at 9 o'clock. The location is not one that I'm familiar with, but it'll be determined.
All right.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes,
ma'am. This was August of 2020.
Yes. Any other questions?
It was close to Zion's Crossroads. It was at the bank.
The bank, yes.
Yeah,
Virginia
Credit Union.
Community Bank.
Yep. Thank you.
All right, thank you so very much. We do appreciate you coming out.
Thank you.
Mr. David and I will say a
gentleman. Exactly. All right, Mr. Spitzer.
Good evening.
Come on up and talk to us about that 2019 county fair.
It's busy. A lot of work.
Oh,
but we have fun.
I can tell you right now, the man had to have lost at least 15 pounds because we were melting out there.
It was hot, yeah. It was hot. Here it is. So, I just got a little bit of appreciation. I'm going to tell you the numbers and kind of what happened at the county fair this year and any questions. And I got, a request or a suggestion maybe for next year that we'll talk about. So this year we had 5,993 to over 7,000. The way you get to 5,993 is divide your gate sales by $2. That's how I got that. I think it was like 11,000. It's a little bit later in the thing. So this is the parking lot on Saturday night at the rodeo. The thing that you cannot see is the cars on the close side of the hill. You can only see the back side of the hill. So you can see how full we were Saturday night.
It's about 10 lines from where he's parking. It's about 10 lines going down.
At least. And it's all full from one side to the other. We haven't taken a picture like that. I was at the rodeo coming out, and I thought that was a great picture to show, actually, how many people do come.
Yeah, you're not too far from the road right now.
Oh, I'm right there at the circle. Yeah. I'm right there before you get to the circle. So I'm right there at it.
I thought that. I'm talking 53. We all
know. Oh, 53. Yeah, they're right on 53. Yeah.
We all know that he was not driving while he took his picture. We all know that he parked.
I was actually walking probably that. I was probably walking during that time. I think I was getting my family in towards the rodeo to show them where to go. So, so our expenses for this year, we did a little over $2,400 in advertising, $27 in general supplies, and just over $10 in contract services. And that's always our biggest. You know, that's where we lent our light towers from. And our tents and our stage and the dumpster and the sheriff's office, and that's always going to be our biggest expense. So our expenses are about $15,625.51 this year. So we'll get to the revenue. Our gate sales were $11,986, and that's how I got the $5,993 for how many people we had at the gate. We didn't charge anyone 18 years or under on the Thursday. It was the school night when we had the pep rally. I would guess at least 500 kids probably came over from the school for that. I was down at the stage putting some sound together, and as soon as you heard the marching band come through, everybody kind of stopped and looked at them. It was awesome. It was like a parade right through to the stage.
And I came riding up with about
100
kids on
the stage. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the pep rally was well attended. So we had, I think it was 40 food vendors, if you look at that. We just did just under $2,700 in food vendors. So that's the non-food paying for spots and the food vendors paying for spots. So our total revenue is $25,316.75. And this page just breaks it down. So we, you know, our balance was $9,691.24, which is up just under $1,000 from last year. So you can kind of see how we've been going the past few years.
Very good.
Thank you. It's a lot of work. And I'll tell you, I'm recognizing the fair board here in a minute, but they do a whole lot for this. Without them, it couldn't be done. The fair board, I have their names here in a minute. And we'll go down and I kind of showed about how many hours everybody's putting in this year. I think it's important because my staff works really hard and we're overworked and we need help. But I'll get to that. So we did a special needs event again. We do it every year. It's from 10 to 12 on the Friday of the fair. We had over, you know, about 40 participants come. Most of them are the schools this year. Last year we had some, you know, private organizations, but we had one kid. She got on a ride a little too big, and we had to get her a new T-shirt. She got a little sick that day, but she had fun. But those are, you know, without that, they probably would have never got on that ride because there's so many people there. So it's a way for them to actually come and ride and have fun. And they open up a game so every kid can play a game and that kind of stuff. So Valley Amusements, they're really good towards that kind of stuff. So, so this year, the fair board, so they do a lot with the fair. And this is something you've never seen before probably. So this is how the rodeo, the tractor pool, a lot of entertainment gets put on. It's through the fair board, not through Parks and Rec. Although we work together. So the revenue, they had 26 monetary sponsors. We had a cornhole, they had a cornhole tournament, a tractor pull, and five in-kind sponsors. So they raised $23,252.86. But then they also have the big expenses too, a lot more than I had. You know, my expenses were 10, I think, 10,000 something. I believe, and theirs are, you know, 21,000. They're taking the big risk on a lot of things, like the bands, you know, I kind of just showed you, but the rodeo is the big one. I'll knock on wood, guys, we hope we don't ever have rain on Saturday because that's the fair board bank's balance if we do. They have to pay that, rain or shine. That's the risk that they take on that we don't have to take on. That's why we created the fair board so that the county doesn't have to take on that risk to have these events. We wouldn't have it. We would.
I mean, if the, let's say they had a year just before the whole time.
We had a hurricane.
We'd be in trouble. Like, the fair board would be in trouble, and we would have to come to the board maybe to for help for the following year. But I'm trying to get to a solution for that in a minute. We'll see. I've thought about this a lot. I did. I've spent a lot of time, so I'm out there. You'll see I was out there a lot. So, do you have questions on that? The last slide, that's something new that you haven't seen. So these are the recognitions I like to give our fair board committee. They're all volunteer. No, that's the hours. A lot of them are. I'm going to tell you, a lot of the people that help us are up in age, and that matters a lot when you're talking about parking, you know, just doing some stuff that some older people can't really do. But I tell you, without Mr. Goins, we wouldn't have a tractor pull or a rodeo, because he brings both of his tractors over there, doesn't charge the county anything, and uses them to move equipment and all that kind of stuff. That's volunteer. You know, that's a lot of money that he's putting in his own volunteer. Wade, they bring waters and stuff from EW, and we have them in the front. It's for, you know, the football players, anybody out parking. They donate a lot. You know, these businesses aren't, and these people aren't just donating their time. They're also donating their own money, too. So I think they need to be, you know, respect, like, showed that we do care about them, and, you know, they're a big part of us.
How much is a sponsor?
Depends. You can sponsor anywhere from $3,500, which is like, I think we had two or three of those, to $50, which is like a sign. So, I mean, an ad in a newspaper, you know, or a book, you know, I think that's like $100. So it all depends on your levels.
Bigger ads, smaller ads?
Yep, we have like a full page ad, we have a business card ad. We have like, some of them are at the rodeo, so they're our rodeo sponsors, they're our bigger sponsors, so they get a big banner put on the rodeo gates. You might be able to see that in a minute in one of the rodeo pictures. So it depends on how much you sponsor is what you kind of get for it.
Are you the photographer also?
Oh, no. And luckily, we had a vendor this year that was a photography. They took pictures and actually gave me the pictures, and I'm going to recognize them at the end. And I had a private assistant actually give me pictures. So that's somewhere where we lack, too, because we're so busy, we don't have time to take pictures. So it's a good thing we did have somebody to help us take pictures.
Talking about pictures, too, there was a Washington Post photographer driving by Pleasant Grove Park one night, and he took a picture from the road, kind of looking at, you know, the carnival. So I'll have to find it.
It's
somewhere.
On the Flavanna County Facebook page, yeah. The fair Facebook page.
And I reached out to him to ask him if we could use it for stuff, and he said we could. Mm-hmm. So it's a real great picture.
And he was just rolling through for the night, so it was pretty cool. So there's about the, I think these are the 26 plus sponsors. Some of the in-kind are in there too. It's not all just the paying. Any questions about that? So here are some of the pictures that the photographer and the other gentleman, I forget his name, he's at the end, they gave us to us. So we had a watermelon and a pieing contest this year. Rides, this is the pep rally, you know, with games, the bull riding event. You can see kind of like, that's where like a sign would be if you're a sponsor, like just as we put you up there and so everybody there. We'd be able to see how many people, and I think they had 710 people pay for the rodeo this year. So that's that's pretty good for, you know, a night crowd. This is something new. I wanted to show you how much we work out there, my staff, Parks and Rec, and everybody. So we did 365 hours just for my five full-time staff and part-time staff. That's with me having to flex at least one of my people off one day a week because I can't give them 60 hours. And you can see a couple of them almost got 50. And that's with one or two days off. So we do a lot of work out there. It's a lot to put on because it's 2 weeks before, it's the week of, and then the week after. Because nobody ever thinks about cleaning up. You know, we try to clean up within a week so it looks nice. You know, we don't want stuff hanging out there. So I just wanted to just show everybody kind of how many hours we put in. And they told me mine's not even right. I worked more than that, but we'll see.
He was out there.
You got to understand, somebody has to be there 8 a.m. in the morning for our vendors to be there. And then somebody has to be there at 11, 12 o'clock at night to count money and turn the lights off. Well, yeah, it's 4 days. But then I have my full-time people that I can't work with so many hours. So somebody has to be there. And I need them more in the evening. than the morning. So that's how I kind of get to my hours. Huh? Yep. So here are some suggestions or requests for next year. We'd like some help with parking. They, even the schools, the football team and the cross country team, they struggle parking. I had to go, I called down in the hole, I had to go and get people off the road because they're just, they're not used to it. They're kind of slow and people are backed up on 53 and I'm getting yelled at, you know, by fire and rescue and the cops, we got to get them off 53. So that takes me away from my job that I have to do and two other staff members to actually go in there and then take over for them. So we need to kind of, we want to look at like a new way to kind of get parking, maybe help, maybe contract it out or something. It may be the best way, I don't know. And that would leave my staff the time to be able to do what they need to do. And maybe not have other county departments have to help out, you know, where my staff could do that. There's a couple, you know, things that we want, I want to try to look at and make some suggestions for. The next one, I would like to raise the gate fee a dollar. And that's to give the fair committee a dollar of that money for seed money. Because like I mentioned, you know, they had $13,000 in the bank, but you know, something happens, the radio gets washed out, they're bankrupt. So this would be a way that they would have money for the next year. And if they didn't get the sponsors they got this year, at least they would have some money and we could start putting the fair on. You know, we could start with the fair before we actually got the sponsors.
I don't even stop anybody from going.
I don't either. I mean, a lot of them are $5 and more, you know, a person. So I don't think that's a big deal. But I would just so you know, I'd like to give that extra dollar to the fair committee and not the county take it. I think that would be
that keeps them from having to come back to us and say.
If something would happen, I mean, we could maybe get them a little bankroll in case something would happen. And they would never have to come say we can't put the county fair on this year because they don't have any money.
You know, or, on the flip side, some of the big draws are some of the things that the fair board puts on, and they ended up clearing about $2,000, where the county cleared about $10,000.
Yeah, so it's
a, it probably would not be a bad idea to do that and let them kind of build up their pot because the rodeo. The tractor pull,
they actually, I think they lost money, so we will not do that again next year. We're going to try to come up with a different thing to do on Friday night, maybe Thursday night. And 4-H actually talked about maybe doing a horse show on Wednesday night, kind of starting the fair out before anything. It's only the carnival. So we're looking at a new few things already for next year. So people really like that we moved the fair up. We didn't go past the farm museum. They really liked that all of it was close. They could, a lot of people listen to music this year. In the past, they wouldn't go in the back. And it was right there at the cemetery in the front, so they could really hear it. And they said it traveled a lot, too, so they could almost hear it at the rodeo, you know, in that area while they were playing. And the other request that I'd have is to have a beer garden on Saturday only from 11 to 6. We had quite a few people ask us if we have something like that out there. I don't think it's uncommon these days. A lot of parents take their kids to wineries. They have a playground for the kids to play at the winery. Our suggestion would be we'd rope it off, so you'd have to leave your alcohol in the area. The fair board would take responsibility of getting the ABC license and running it, so that takes a little bit off the county. And we'd put it near the fun zone in the stage where they could actually sit there and watch their kids play and listen to music while they're having a beverage. And they wouldn't have more than four beverages. Like anywhere else you would go, any concerts or anything, they limit to four. I think that's what we did when we had the grand opening for the farm museum. When we had alcohol out there, we limited to four drinks. So as a suggestion, and this is another way for the fair committee to be able to get some bank for their bank, you know, some cash for their bank by being able to take the sales off beer. And we could get maybe a bigger sponsor too. Devil's Backbone won the sponsor. We don't allow alcohol. They're not going to sponsor because that's their.
Got the local wineries.
And the local wineries and places like that, you know. It opens you up to a whole new avenue of sponsors and stuff like that. And people want it. You know, we heard people kind of wanted it. So we just kind of wanted your opinion on, you know, if that's something that we could probably do, huh?
It's fine.
I mean, yeah, we don't, you know.
Like you said, I would definitely reach out to the ones that are in the county.
Mm-hmm. We would, just like Old Farm Day, they had the little beer garden for the first time. I kind of showed them where to put it, so we would kind of do the same thing they did, and And we would definitely get our local wineries and breweries invited if they wanted to come.
Yeah. That's what I mean between that. I can't remember what the name of the one is. It does have the garage.
Are you talking about Antioch
Brewery? Antioch.
The
beer.
Antioch Brewery.
Yep.
James River Brewery.
They come. Yeah, the Antioch was at our other other event when we did the wine.
Thistle Gate. You got four right there.
See,
three breweries, two wineries.
And then there's some others that could possibly come if they wanted to. I know they had a cider place at Old Farm Day. And then I like to thank Aces Jewel Photography and Rich Russell for the pictures. They are the ones that supplied all the pictures that I had in my presentation today. Any questions that I can answer? No.
Looks like you did very well.
Thank you. Yep. It's not just me. It's my staff. They did a great job, too. So, and
staff.
Like I said, the football team and all cross country, we can't do it without them either. They park there. So
I think the message from the board to Mr. Spitzer is go ahead with those changes for next time, for next year. And
those changes sound good.
Okay.
I think they're totally reasonable.
And what I would do is price, if I wanted to look at a parking, I will price that for a budget, for a budget thing. And it'll be in my budget request for next year. I'll make sure you know what it would be before we go forward with that.
Make sure you put this down, but remember I talked to you about that. We can use the local radio stations.
Yep.
Because it's nonprofit. I mean, I heard the Amherst County Fair advertised.
Ours is on NBC 29. They did it on their thing.
Like 99.7. They did the Amherst thing about every 30 minutes.
They paid a good penny for it, too.
Oh, did they?
Yep. It's not cheap. We looked into that, and we're trying to figure out. So we got on CBS 19.
Mm-hmm. How about 1070?
That's all part of a group. Yep. Okay. So what you do is you buy a group of radio stations and they promote your event, whatever, during those times. And okay. And they wanted to actually come out on site, and we saw it as not being cost effective for us for the amount of money they wanted to charge us.
Okay.
So we tried to go a couple of different routes, but we're always looking for new things. So, but I know like this, there's a free PSA you can put in and all that kind of stuff. So we're always trying new stuff. All right.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you all. Have a good night.
And nobody melted in the parking lot. I'm telling you guys, I was out there Saturday morning from 11 to about 2. They always peel me up with the shovel.
What were you doing?
Parking cars. Sir.
Parking cars?
And I got ready to say thank you for not throwing me under the bus, because part of the backup would happen when I'm standing in the road. Because I got to have a 2-minute conversation.
I told him the one time he had to grass.
2 minutes?
Hey, well, I'm trying. Thank you, Mr. Levy. Yes, sir.
He was talking.
Yes, I can't believe that they were telling me. I talked to him. I can't believe that. All right, consent agenda. G, minutes of August 21st, 2019, Mrs. Lease. And H, FY19 Treasurer's of Office Supplemental Appropriation, Ms. MacGyver.
And just one thing to note, Mr. Weaver had asked about having 9 conditions listed on the minutes, and Ms. Solis did add those to the minutes. They're not in your package, but they've been added to the actual minutes, and they'll go online corrected.
Okay.
Did you have something?
No, that was it. I just thought maybe he would, maybe had put it up there so they could see the changes and understand what you're precisely talking about. That's the reason I gave it to you earlier.
What's that? Where is it?
The link that was on the page. But it's okay.
Which one?
Doc. Okay. Under link.
It's under here.
It's either link or doc. Yeah, the doc part of it. There you go.
So where is it?
It's SUP 1907.
This one doesn't. I don't
there
think
it is.
Has
coming
it.
Up.
This is 1907. I don't see the. Did you want the actual
9 conditions listed in the staff report?
Yep. Is that what you wanted, Mr. Weaver?
Yes.
Yep.
Did you list those?
Do you want the actual 9 conditions?
Absolutely. Or? That would be part of the motion.
So this may be the wrong document. Let me see here.
It's in the minutes. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I apologize. It's been updated.
I just didn't update the line.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
So you've got that taken care of on the actual.
It's coming up. What is that?
Oh, am I the wrong one? I'm sorry. I'm looking at today's meeting.
Sorry. We're all friends.
Yeah, I
didn't.
There
we go.
Oh, well, that was it. The thing was it right there.
Right there.
Okay.
Those are conditions. That's for each one of them.
A plus there.
Yep.
Thank you. The next one as well.
Yep.
Uh-huh. 1906 and 1906.
1906, there's a nine conditions.
Okay.
Under 1907.
The reason I didn't want to make too much confusion about it.
That's all right. We had enough confusion.
I should have printed it out for you and given everybody an update.
Oh, we can learn. Thank you.
All right. Oh, do I have a motion?
So made. To approve the minutes of August 21st, 19, and the Treasurer's Office Supplemental Appropriation Consent Agenda, G&H.
Second. Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. I see no unfinished business. I see no new business. Is there any new business that y'all want to sit here talking? I'll make sure I ask everyone. All right, we will now move to our second round of public comments. Anyone wishing to address the board should come to the podium, state your name and address. Please remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak at this time? Seeing no one, I'll now close the second round of public comment. Mr. O'Brien.
Chair, I move the Nutter County Board of Supervisors and Mr. Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Pennsylvania County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify to the best of each member's knowledge, one, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950, as amended, and two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting were convened, were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
So made.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We are now adjourned.